are listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a few new episodes of original programming.
Welcome to Bridging the Gap. I'm your host, Marianne Rose. You are about to embark on a relevant and timely journey of thought with registered psychologist Dr. Cyrus Dirksen. Thank you for tuning in and expect to be enlightened right now. Hey there, Cyrus. How are you doing today?
Very good. Very good. How are you doing, Marianne?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Today we're recording separately again. I didn't want to get in my car. I actually saw the wind and I thought, oh, we have this beautiful opportunity to just be on the phone. We're having some kind of wind. It's like 70 kilometers an hour wind gusts and snow blowing and
it is pretty ugly out there. We were swapping stories about how we manage things and I got a little electric snow blower and it was pretty chilly out there. I can understand why people who are snow blowing get the full suit and because it's just you create your own wind chill out there. And but I made it this time and I had some meetings, so I'm just happy to be in my warm office now, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being accommodating so that I can record from home. So for sound quality for everybody who's listening, we're doing our best this way, and I think it's still going to come through all right, but that's where you're getting Cyrus's voices on the phone. Well, thank you for joining me. I wanted to talk about what people go through in small ways and in big ways about anxiety.
That is a big topic.
Yeah.
Very important. Mm-hmm.
One of the things I wanted to start with was anxiety as being something that's useful.
Mm.
Like, how can we see that there's maybe an importance to?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a very good question, and it can be confusing for people, right? There is an element where we're born with certain anxieties around things that we display at a very young age. Around separation anxiety, or like if you take a baby at a certain age, they'll all of a sudden be afraid of crossing over a glass bridge, over a gap. They'll develop their fear of heights. And so, yeah, this is a developmental thing that keeps us safe. You know, it's like pain, where it's like, well, I don't want any pain. And then you see somebody who has a disorder where they can't feel pain, and then all of a sudden that becomes a problem for them, and it can become dangerous. So we want to be able to feel the world, and we want to be able to feel the things that are dangerous around us. And people sometimes, it's pretty rare, but people will come in and they'll talk about something and they'll be like, I don't know if I want to get rid of your anxiety around that. You know, like that's actually a healthy thing to be anxious of. You know, sometimes people will have jobs even that are traumatizing almost inherently. You know, like I think about some emergency responders or medical examiners or things like this. And it's hard for me to kind of get my head around sometimes the fact that we've become, you know, so specialized that people are, you know, doing these jobs where they're like looking at, you know, horrific scenes all day, every day. And even reporters sometimes or people reading the news, they can develop traumatic reactions to these things. And they come in and they're like, well, how can I keep being a medical examiner? And part of me is like, wow, well, this is natural. I don't know if anybody's really supposed to be looking at these horrific scenes all day. And your mind will probably change, you know, in some ways in order to be able to do that. So somebody said, like, I want to be able to jump off of a bridge. Well, we work with people who are suicidal to make them more anxious about doing things like that, to make them more hesitant about ending their life, or we help people to get out of traumatic situations. And so when people are asking to do those things, it just shows like there is a place for this. There's a place for people to feel nervous, and it can be a little bit of a guide on how to navigate our world.
So it can be useful in the realm of not judging it and dismissing it and having it where it's like an important component to your response as an emergency worker, or even in a heightened awareness, like you're working with dangerous materials or a job that requires safety, immense attention, and having that be part of your protection doesn't have to necessarily come from your own trauma, something bad having had happened to you, hey? But then when it comes to mental health and people who have anxiety, like I was talking about, maybe smaller anxieties, like just day-to-day things, but they don't like the feeling of anxiety, or where people have it as a disorder and it's a crippling thing, an anxiety disorder. And so it ranges, right? There's ranges of how big it can be and how little, but it's still something that people resist, right? And so that sense of how do we learn to adapt adapt or adjust to the feeling of it so that it's not such a threat. And so I like that little bit of an idea of that, okay, well, some people have this as their job, but if it's a lifestyle, like some people have developed and trained their bodies in a way that now they just feel anxious a lot, I guess, depending on what happened to them.
Yeah, the idea of learning to work with your anxiety is important. It's an important idea because if you get into that place where you're like, I can't experience anxiety, that can actually be a very almost dangerous place to be in your mental health. And that can actually happen for people, for example, people coming from a Christian background and where the Bible talks about anxiety and talks about not being anxious for things, which I think has some context in the Bible that's important. But if you take that very broadly, people could be like, well, if I'm feeling anxious, that's guaranteed to be like, you know, an unspiritual reality. It's a sin or something like that. And maybe it is a sign of immaturity or a sign of a problem for sure. I don't want to take that away, but you can take that to a point where it's like, I can't have anxiety. And so you get to this place where it becomes a problem, where you almost start denying that you even have anxiety when you do, because you want to be in a different place. And you want to just be like, I'm not going to acknowledge this anxiety. And even talking about from a spiritual point of view there, but people come into the clinic all the time. They can't have this in their life. They don't want anxiety. They don't like anxiety. They don't want to experience it in any way. And that could be difficult. It actually, paradoxically, increases anxiety. The need to not have anxiety can be something that's like pouring oil on a flame, where if you're trying to help, trying to get rid of it by not wanting it, and it actually makes it worse, yeah. Which is a really sad paradox for a lot of people.
I see that too as a problem, because a person that makes anxiety their problem and they can't let go of the guilt of feeling anxious, so they're perpetuating it more. So that makes sense, because they're feeling guilty instead of examining, acknowledging the awareness of it, but judging it as this crime, right? Like I used the word sin there. And okay, wait a second. Does it need to be treated like that? Do we need to be so harsh because scripturally speaking, or just in our own bodies and minds and how we have felt about that? It's like wrong. It's wrong to feel this way. Don't feel this way. Be anxious for nothing. But is it really supposed to be that, where it's directed as a harsh penalty on not getting control of this?
For people who come in, like, my goal is not to make them more anxious. They might experience more anxiety in the process of getting rid of their anxiety, but my goal is to help them to not feel anxious. But oftentimes people will say, like, they'll hear that scripture and be like, oh, okay, so be anxious for nothing, and then they'll just set their minds to not being anxious and think that that is the way to become anxiety free. Is like, I'm just going to really try to not be anxious, and I'm going to make it unacceptable to be anxious. And even if your goal is to be less anxious, that's probably not the best way, particularly with significant anxiety. I mean, lots of times with minor anxieties, like this, the just stop it strategy can be maybe effective with small anxieties. Like, oh, you know what, this is just a small thing. And you just say, hey, just stop feeling anxious about that. And it works. It's like, well, wow, that worked. And that can then feel like a really good strategy. Maybe it is in small things, but if it's more significant or persistent, those strategies can actually, you know, like I said, make it worse. And I don't think, you know, when you think about the ways, like if we're talking about from a spiritual point of view, like the ways that God created to help people feel less anxious, it generally wasn't like a fight it kind of thing. Like, just stop it. Like, I don't think he would just say to somebody who's anxious, be like, you know, just stop feeling anxious. Normally, like, you think about the ways that he would go about that with a person. Well, he talked about perfect love casting out fear. Like, it's not so much of a, you have to just stop this bad behavior. It's more like, well, that's a reality. If you're anxious about your finances, if you're having trouble trusting God, that's not something that's like, oh, that's bad, just stop. It's more like, wow, that's a sign that you're in a certain place in your spiritual walk. It's not maybe okay, but it's kind of like, it's your reality. And in that sense, like, there's grace. And then what are the steps? And it might not be just to stop being anxious. It might be trying to develop your relationship with God, or finding out how much he loves you and things like that, which is a really different way of tackling your anxiety than just feeling bad or angry at the fact that you're feeling, or denying that you're anxious at all.
Yes, I agree. Being able to accept that there is love for that, the response that you can give yourself if you're going to go talk to God about it. And that's the rest of that one scripture about be anxious for nothing says, but in everything, make your requests known to God. And so it's not that you're shutting down and putting hate on yourself or towards anybody else who has anxiety. Is to show love as a response. Make your requests known. Let him know how you feel. Let him know that this is bothering you, that you're upset, that this is an anxious problem, that you feel this way, that there's something to talk about. I want to talk a little bit more about that when we get back from our break. Maybe how do we develop a habit of anxiety or develop a habit of letting go? Talking about anxiety, and I hope that people listening aren't feeling more anxious because just the word and the connotations on it. I know for sometimes it's so important to be able to share and talk through, you know, have somebody that you can trust, and we call it vent, right? It's just like I want to vent to somebody about how I'm feeling and bleh. And sometimes it's like just verbal diarrhea and it's very useless and it's not going to get anywhere. And I maybe call that more like a rant than a vent session. You know, people really value being able to vent and being able to share and express their pain and anxiety and issues and that. But I also know that it can become a habit that a person can train themselves to have a lifestyle of worry, talking about problems nonstop. Mm-hmm. And yeah, an emotional lifestyle of worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think that sometimes people can look to conversations as a way of coping, potentially in an unhealthy way. I'll give you an example. If you were talking about children with anxiety, for example, I remember one, he was kind of a leading psychologist in Winnipeg, particularly around children with anxiety. And he would say, like, if you could get parents to stop reassuring their children, it would cut down children's anxiety typically by 50% just by doing that. Now, reassurance is an interesting topic. When you're giving a child information, that's obviously okay. Children need information, and maybe they don't know, they're learning, and things like this. But when you're repeatedly telling them the same thing over and over again to make them feel better, usually reassurance makes people more anxious. It reduces their anxiety when they're feeling reassured. Oh, that's nice. You know, like they might ask, like, will daddy die? You know, like, are you going to die, daddy? And then you might say, no, no, daddy's not going to die. And then it makes them feel better. But then it will come back and probably be stronger, and they'll be looking for more and more reassurance. So in that way, if you're talking about people coming and maybe through venting or things like that, then people are just like, no, no, it's going to be fine. No, no, it's going to be fine. No, no, it's going to be fine. It will often make that anxiety worse and lead to this lifestyle of depending on other people to tolerate the uncertainty in their life. So when we're dealing with that, we're actually trying to have interactions with people where we're helping them to deal with their feelings and cope on their own, where they're with them. And instead of saying, you know, daddy won't die, it's like, yeah, daddy might die. And that's hard, isn't it? Like, it's hard to think about that. And I'll be here with you as you cope with that. But we need to help everybody to learn to tolerate these uncertainties, maybe with support, but not by repeated reassurance and denial, which can so often happen.
And the time that a person takes with themselves to sort through can end up being the same as they're doing with another person. They can just be regurgitating, recycling, and going through the same problem instead of looking to a solution or sitting with it for a while to sort it out. It becomes something where now the choice is a mind-numbing activity. Social media, time-watching, senseless comedy or something, you know, just something that's not going to make an impact, but it's going to bring some short-term ease of stress.
I love the idea of people being able to get away here and there to be able to manage. But I agree with you. I think that it can become a problem when people are consistently either reassuring themselves, you know, like they're like, oh, it'll be okay, it'll be okay, it'll be okay. Or if they're distracting themselves all the time, you know, the world will probably encourage us. And there's true to an extent to try to get away from our anxiety. But usually to overcome anxiety, to feel less anxiety, you actually have to feel more. You have to find ways to experience the thing you're afraid of and cope. And if you can do that physically, that's great. Like, I'm afraid of driving or something, and then you actually drive. And it also is great if you can do it mentally, where it's like, I'm afraid of driving, I don't want to drive. And it's like, no, I'm going to face this fear. It's kind of like this bully in my life, and I'm going to face it, and I can take the fear that it's dishing out. That kind of attitude can be something that really helps people to feel less fear in the future. Like, it helps people to overcome and approach it differently.
I like that. So believing you can. Okay, I can handle this. I can. And I will work this through. I will have a voice of love for yourself is one big part of it. I remember someone I knew when I was growing up, and they had had a really rough life and made a lot of really bad choices. But as they grew older, they matured. And I remember at a reunion event, I heard them speak and publicly acknowledge their awfulness. And what they advised everyone to do is something I'll never forget. They just be kind, be gentle. And chances are they themselves know, you know, a person who's being really disruptful with their choices knows how horrible they are. And the last thing they need is a constant reminder from everyone who knows them. And, you know, they're already hard enough on themselves. So that kindness and that gentleness, like when I say that you can, you have the power or strength within you to be kind to yourself, to walk through this. You know, because I think maybe that is what stops people from walking through it, is that they can't be gentle with themselves. They're too upset.
Yeah, I think oftentimes people will take two approaches to anxiety when they're dealing with their friends. And these can be helpful at times. Like, I don't want to say they're wrong. They're very common and sometimes don't work, which is you help your friend get away from it. And that could be fine. It's like, okay, you know, you're anxious about this and this and this. Let's go watch a movie. Let's go eat some ice cream. Let's distract you. We'll distract together. I'll help you to get away from this. And that could be great for people. Like, people need a break sometimes. And that could be good. The other one is maybe being a bit more direct or maybe even harsh and being like, you need to get over this. Stop it. And that kind of thing. And telling people to somehow overcome it. So those are two of the more common ones. The one that is less common, which can be helpful for more significant anxiety, is to be kind and not distract the person, because oftentimes we think about kindness as taking away the anxiety. So I'll do it for you, or we'll go away from it together. Instead of saying, I'm not going to do this for you, and I'm not going to take you away from it, but we can go through it together at your pace. I'll be here as a support, but I'm not going to take away the challenge. Like, we're going to do it, or maybe we'll do it in steps. Maybe I'll take away some of the challenge at the beginning, but we'll take steps, and you will face your fear, and I'll be here beside you as you do, and I'll be kind as I do it. I won't be harsh. That's more rare. I mean, obviously it happens, but normally people will either go with the less kind firm or the kind and then enabling or taking away the anxiety or distracting or doing it for the person. Those are usually the two that I would see in people who are friends or partners of people who are feeling anxious.
Yeah. I like the idea of also using that same strategy on yourself, and that you as a friend would show kindness and be there and walk through with love and support to be able to look through to a solution. But then you would also do that with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that would be a way to calm and heal even long-term anxiety, traumatic event anxiety, that you could sit and sort it out with kindness on yourself towards the anxiety instead of that frustration of it being a dark, foreboding, unacceptable thing.
Yes. Yeah. I agree 100%. I think the exact thing that I said there regarding friends is true for people and how they treat themselves. I have clients, they will distract themselves. They will be kind to themselves by getting them away from whatever they're afraid of, and they will avoid it for a very long time. One of the biggest symptoms of anxiety, and the easiest ways to identify anxiety, is probably not with the feelings of fear, but actually with avoidance. Avoidance is a very key thing to look for. Sometimes people don't even realize they're anxious, but then if you look for avoidance, you can see it. So they'll avoid. They'll be like that kind friend who's just taking them away from the pain, and they'll be like, you don't have to deal with it. It'll just go away on its own. So they'll avoid. And then sometimes in a dramatic shift, they'll be like, now it's time to get over this. Like, you just do it already. And then they'll try to do the whole thing at once. They'll try to swallow the whale. And then it'll be a failure because they took on too much and they tried to do it too fast. And they took that harsh, extreme attitude. And then they get discouraged. And then they go back to distracting and avoiding because they failed now. So that middle approach, which can be so hard for people to identify, is that kindness and then taking small bites and walking through. And I agree with you. I think we need to do that with ourselves. We need to be kind to ourselves, allow ourselves to be like, hey, you're anxious. This is a reality. Can't deny it. And we're going to face it. And it's okay. And it's okay to take it off in small bites. And to develop that voice towards yourself in that way can be pretty challenging for people. They're not used to that.
Yeah. I think we're hearing a lot about it, but I don't know how easy it is for some people to accept the term, it's okay not to be okay. And I think when I hear that, sometimes I'm like, okay, well, now that's a redundant thing in a way. I'm an advocate of it, but it also feels like a kick in the pants. It's like, well, no, it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's challenging to feel that paradox of I'm doing the best I can, but I need to do more. You know, we want to give ourselves that feeling of grace, that kind of love and acceptance. And we don't really have a great word for this, but we want to combine acceptance with commitment. So there's actually a whole therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy, because it rests on this idea that people flourish under this dual concept of this love and acceptance. You know, you're perfect just the way you are. And then commitment, and you need to change, you know, like, which don't really make sense together, but is a really great fertilizer for human emotional health. You know, like, I'm perfect, I'm loved, I'm doing the best I can, and I need to do more, and I need to keep working on myself because I can improve, but I need to do it in love, and I need to do it in patience and in this kind of warm, safe atmosphere. So we need to find a way to walk that middle ground with each other and with ourselves.
I love it. And I feel like we've really helped people today when it comes to anxiety. And thank you.
I mean, this is just such an important topic. I love the idea of being able to talk about it and give people some tips maybe and some stories to help them orient themselves to this.
Yeah, really good stuff. Thanks, Cyrus.
For sure. Thanks, Marianne.
Well, that was an honor to get to spend that time with you. Appreciate you tuning in. Please check out more of Dr. Cyrus at maplecrestchurch.ca. and at drcyrusdirksen.com. Thanks again, and tune in next time for Bridging the Gap. I'm Marianne Rose.
CKUW is provided by the West End Cultural Center, your friendly local arts nonprofit. Community is important to us. Did you know the WEC offers free drop-in music lessons in partnership with the Manitoba Conservatory of Music and Arts? The tune-in program runs Tuesdays at the West End Cultural Center, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. for youth ages 12 to 18.
Hi, my name's Joan Reno. I'm the host of Sunny Road every Friday from 10 a.m. to 11. From a dimly lit juke joint to a country field and everything in between, meet me on the sun.